Penguin Random House Audio presents Modern Love, revised and updated. True stories of love, loss, and redemption. Edited by Daniel Jones. Read for you by Susan Bennett, Will Brill, Michael Crouch, Kevin R. Free, Emma Galvin, Catherine Ho, Robin Miles, Maggie Meg Reed, Sean Runette, and Gabra Zachman. With an introduction read by Daniel Jones.
Introduction. What is a love story? As the editor of the Modern Love column, I ask myself that question all the time. When working my way through the 8,000-plus personal essay submissions that pour in every year, I am constantly forced to think, is this a love story? Is that? If the New York Times is the newspaper of record, does that mean I'm choosing the love stories of record? If so, I'd better at least have a working definition. When Modern Love began in 2004, we founding editors of the column, Styles editor Trip Gabriel, my wife Kathy Hanauer, and I, decided we would interpret love broadly because we didn't want to limit the stories to romantic love. We hoped the stories would explore the darkness as much as the light, plumb both the joys and the pain that spring from our lifelong efforts to be intimate with other human beings. The most powerful stories typically involved relationships that had some mileage, the trials of midlife marriage, the strains of parenthood, and the loss of loved ones, children, spouses, parents, friends. These stories seldom celebrate roses and kisses, but are they love stories? Absolutely. Vulnerability is the animating quality of all love stories, and it can take many forms. In every case, though, vulnerability means exposing ourselves to the possibility of loss, but also, crucially, to the possibility of connection. You can't have one without the other. The stakes vary, of course, from dipping one's toe in the water to taking a blind dive from a high cliff. Rachel Fields, in her essay The Five Stages of Ghosting Grief, details her mounting anxiety after sending her first mildly sexual text message to a new guy she started seeing, and then waiting in agony for him to respond. For hours. Which might as well have been a lifetime. A different kind of vulnerability is on display in Amy Krauss Rosenthal's You May Want to Marry My Husband, in which she writes a kind of dating profile for her husband because she's dying from ovarian cancer and doesn't want him to be alone after she's gone. I suppose if we are going to try to define what a love story is, we should begin by defining what love is, but that can be even more slippery. Our definitions of love, too, tend toward the flowery treatment. From where I sit, however, as someone who has read, skimmed, or otherwise digested some 100,000 love stories over the past 15 years, love at its best is more of a wheelbarrow than a rose, gritty and messy, but also durable, yet still hard to put into words. Once, at the start of a radio interview, the host introduced me as the Modern Love editor, and then asked, as her first question, "So what is love?" I was so caught off guard, I laughed nervously and then said, "You're really going to open with that?" When she didn't laugh, we shared an awkward moment before I mumbled some generalities about human connection. I wish I'd remembered how I had already answered that question in the Modern Love column a few years before, when I stepped into the space as editor during Valentine's Week to note some observations. Because love, for me, is less about definitions than examples. Which is why I think the kaleidoscope of experiences represented in the Modern Love column, and in this book, can do the job better than any dictionary. Back then I wrote, "If I were Spock from Star Trek, I would explain that human love is a combination of three emotions or impulses: desire, vulnerability, and bravery. Desire makes one feel vulnerable, which then requires one to be brave. Since I'm not Spock, I will tell a story. Say you decide to adopt a baby girl in China. You receive her photo, put it on your refrigerator, and gaze at it as the months pass, until finally you're halfway around the world, holding her in your arms, tears of joy streaming down your face. But later, in your hotel room, after undressing her, you discover worrisome physical signs, in particular, a scar on her spine. You call the doctor, then head to the hospital for examinations and CAT scans, where you are told the following. She suffered botched spinal surgery that caused nerve damage. Soon she will lose all bladder and bowel control. Oh, and she will be paralyzed for life. We're so sorry. The adoption agency offers you a choice. Keep this damaged baby or trade her in for a healthier one. You don't even know about the trials yet to come, about the alarming diagnoses she'll receive back home, the terrifying seizures you'll witness, nor do you know about the happy ending that is years off, when she comes through it all and is perfectly fine. You have to decide now. This is your test. What do you do? If you're Elizabeth Fitzsimons, who told this story here one Mother's Day, you say, "We don't want another baby. We want our baby, the one sleeping right over there. She's our daughter." That's love. Anyone can have it. All it requires is a little bravery, or a lot. If you're looking for random acts of bravery, including Elizabeth's, you'll find them in this audiobook. These tales shock and instruct. They provoke laughter and heartache and tears. Occasionally, it's true, they aren't even very modern. Always, they pry open the oyster shell of human love to reveal the dark beauty within.
Somewhere out there.
Single, Unemployed, and Suddenly Myself by Marissa Lasher. Read by Catherine Ho. I was 37, single, unemployed, and depressed because in a couple of months I was going to be moving out of my studio apartment on East 23rd Street in Manhattan and in with my mother in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn. Since taking a buyout at my Wall Street firm, I had devoted myself to two activities, searching for a new job and working out. And I spent a lot of time in my apartment. So did the three recent college graduates next door. At their weekend parties, a loud bass penetrated our shared wall, starting at 10:30 p.m. In sweats, no makeup, and with my hair piled in a bun, I would go out and ring their bell around 11 p.m., early, even by my geriatric standards, to ask them to quiet down. One of them would appear, flush with alcohol and annoyance, and promise to turn it down. Usually they did. When they didn't, I would call the doorman, the management company, and once, the police. But the noise continued. My 23rd Street building was near three colleges. When I signed the lease, I didn't realize the place had so many student renters, people who understandably liked to party. Yet it was the least social time in my life. Most of my friends were married. I had no income, and rent was almost $3,000 a month. I wasn't dating because I hadn't figured out how to positively spin my unemployment story. One afternoon in the elevator, I saw one of the guys from next door in jeans and a t-shirt, his dark hair slightly receding. "Are you always around in the middle of the day?" he asked. "For the last few months I have been," I said. "I'm job searching." "I am too," he said. "It's my last year of law school." "Never leave a job without another," I told him. People had warned me about this, but it was only after I'd done it that I realized how true it was. As we neared our doors, I said, "I'm moving out, so you guys can blast your music all night long. The mean old lady is leaving." "Why?" he asked. "I can't afford this any longer. I'm moving in with my mom in Brooklyn." "That sucks," he said, then added,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?